for April 5th, 2007. It's the Lullabot Podcast. Lullabot Podcast. Bit of a cough today. I hope that's not going to be a problem.
Is it the Drupal cough?
You know, I bet it is. I bet it is. It seems like everyone who went to the OSCMS summit in Sunnyvale came away with a little bit of some sort of whooping cough or something. some sort of a little, you know, bout of pneumonia or something. Oh, look, there's some.
This is exactly how Legionnaires got named.
I guess so. well, it's the Lullabot Drupal Podcast episode 36, I think.
Whoa. Ooh.
I think that's what I just posted to Twitter. Yes, number 36. Whoop. And I'm Jeff Robbins, and I'm on the line with
Angela Byron
and
Jeff Eaton.
And we get together more or less every week and talk about all things Drupal. And sometimes we interview people about their Drupal things and that kind of thing. And every so often we'll put up a song about Drupal, apparently mostly just to annoy people.
Well, we are frat boys and we get a kick out of that, so...
You know, as I said, you try and sell some cola, and you know, you get a hard time for it. So, I thought it was funny, you know, fun.
I'm still just struck by the novelty of being called a frat boy. I think everyone that met OSCMS can recognize the irony.
So, yeah. Well, you know, anytime you take a stand on anything, I guess you stir some stuff up. If people want to follow along with what we're talking about, you can go to lullabot.com/podcast, and there's the Drupal song. And actually, I think most of the excitement has been happening in the articles section, where I put up the sort of raw tracks for the song, and people have been doing remixes of the song. And some people have been doing remixes, and some people have been protesting the fact that people would do remixes of this. I don't even know that I can come up with the words that they're using.
Well, this is a family podcast.
Yes, so. It is. I have to tag this as clean, so we'll just leave it there. But yeah. So
I think the key is that I think some people just didn't recognize that this isn't like some sort of massive marketing push to, you know, get Drupal out in front of, you know, new enterprise customers or something like that. It's a cool jingle. It was fun. You know, it made folks inside the Drupal community go, ha, ha, a Drupal song. It you know, that's the spirit in which it's done.
Yeah, you know, we're selling cornflakes. Or not. You know. They're free cornflakes. What do you want? Anyways. Whatever. So we don't really like have a specific agenda today. We're not interviewing anyone. We just figured we'd sort of get together and catch up. In the past, when we've done these, they've actually been really action-packed podcasts. So hopefully,
this
will be
pressure on. Jeez.
I know. Hopefully, this will be another action-packed one, or maybe not. I don't know.
There may be car chases.
So what are you guys up to? What
fixed signatures. Sorry.
Yeah. So signatures in Drupal have been something that have been annoying Angie for I think pretty much since she first laid eyes on Drupal itself. So
yeah, pretty much.
What was wrong with signatures, and what did you do that quote unquote fixed signatures?
So for those who haven't heard my signature rant, I'll shorten it up. Basically, it shows up right in the comment box when you're trying to type. So when you tab into the box, your cursor appears at the end of your signature and you have to mouse. It's just frustrating. Anyway, so that's number one. Number two is that there's no way to tell what the comment body is versus what the signature is. It's just all mushed in there together, which means you can't theme them, which means you can't, you know, do any, like, stick it in another box or anything like that. And the other thing that annoys me about them is that forum posts don't get an initial signature, but all the comments do. So when you use forums, that's the first thing people notice is like, why did my signature not show up over there?
Right.
So the first two of those things are now fixed in Drupal 6. When they now are, signatures now get rendered when you view a page. So that means two things. It means that you can theme them. And it also means that you can, when you change the signature in your user profile, it changes it across the entire site. So that's the behavior that most people coming from any kind of other bulletin board system expect, so Drupal does that now. And the other patch I'm working on is to fix the first problem, which is actually going to be stickier than I thought, because the node comment variable in node.tpl.php kind of just is a big mush of everything, and it's really hard to say, I just want that little piece of mush, and I want it to go right there, but I want to have control over where it puts on the page and stuff like that. So that might involve doing some fancy tricks or something like that. So, yeah.
Cool. Signatures. Yes. It's those little edge things that sort of don't get the attention that they oftentimes deserve, particularly in open source. Until Angie comes along.
That's right. I care about the edge cases. So we actually, on the DrewBB group, we have formulated a plan for an action plan for improving core forums in Drupal 6. So if anybody's interested in helping out on that, just head over to groups.drupal.org and take a look at the post. So,
which would really be awesome, because I don't think the Drupal forum system has changed significantly since I've been involved in the Drupal project. It's stayed pretty much the same for quite a while. I didn't mean to kill the conversation.
No, sorry. I was updating it occurred to me that the Drupal song page didn't actually have a link back to the tracks and the remix tracks on the other page. So if you come to the Drupal song, then you don't see that there's all these remixes that people did, and vice versa. So let's see. So now we've got that there. So.
So now we can get more criticism. Yay! Okay. So
no. So some of these tracks are pretty good. Some of these tracks are not quite as good, but fun nonetheless. Here, let's see. Here, I'll play one or two. Let's see. You know, I notice a trend in these songs. I like the songs, except for the part that's the Drupal song. And the other thing is that it's actually like, you know, for all the excitement and energy in the song, it's actually really slow tempo. I think it's like 88 beats per minute for, you know, so most songs sort of are around 120 beats per minute, give or take quite a bit. But this song's pretty slow. And so when you actually like put it into something that's kind of fast, you have to speed it up so much. So I don't know.
What we need is jazz undertones. That would take care of that.
Undertones. Yeah. There's this this one. There was one that actually sort of went with the slow thing. Uh, let's see.
It's
what
a
else
Drupal ballad.
Yeah, it's the Drupal power ballad. It's Drupal's answer to Bon Jovi. Let's see. That one kind of takes a while to kick in, but I think that might be my favorite one. Although they all are special in their own special way.
It's like having children.
Oh, look, there's a new one. Something to do with a vocoder. I haven't listened to this one yet. Hopefully, it's not obscene. I think that maybe that's my new favorite one. I don't know. Let's see. I need to make sure that one's approved.
You have been vocoded.
Something. I've been. It's been something. This is exciting. All of this is exciting. So, anyways, there's a whole bunch of versions on here. If you go to lullabot.com/the_Drupal_song_remix_tracks, and I guess we'll put that in the show notes for this this podcast, or you could just go to this podcast page, and there'll be links to all this, at least the pages that have these things on them, and the tracks are up there. You can download the tracks and load them into your favorite music munging program and do whatever you like to them. So let's see. I guess the last podcast was sort of a wrap up of the OSCMS. What were your takes on it from y'all down in the trenches?
That was awesome.
It was a blast meeting like all of the various people from the Drupal community that like I had IRC names and email addresses, but there was no actual real like person to associate with them. Meeting all those people face-to-face was just awesome.
Yes, this is... Eaton is a DrupalCon virgin, or was before this, so...
It's true.
So
yeah, that was your first Drupal conference. So I think it was a little bit confusing to people because it wasn't actually called a DrupalCon or Drupal conference, but it, in fact, really pretty much was. There was some Joomla presence and various other CMSs enough for people who are interested in those things to go and see those things. But I think sort of due to the nature of the fact that how quickly it sold out and stuff like that, I think we're going to keep the Drupal conferences separate from now on. People are already sort of gearing up to talk about the next one, which is in where's that happening? Barcelona, right?
Yeah.
Is there actually like a page for that yet?
Yeah, there's a group on the group's site. Actually, DrupalCon.org might see. Oh, okay. So right now it's in planning. If you go to groups.drupal.org/Barcelona, maybe? Probably not. So. This is why you can't ask me these questions right off the cut.
Sorry.
Let's see. groups.drupal.org/DrupalCon/Barcelona-2007. That's where the talk about planning and stuff like that's going on. So,
groups.drupal.org/DrupalCon-Barcelona-2007. I'm putting this in the show notes. 2007. Okay, cool.
The other thing that hasn't really been, I shouldn't mention this. Anyway, there's going to be a Drupal Camp Toronto as well, which is not a DrupalCon, but it's like a bunch of Canadian Drupal geeks getting together and having a bar camp style Drupal
Cool.
So
awesome.
Yeah.
What's the difference between a Drupal convention and a Drupal camp?
Well, Drupal convention, Drupal cons tend to be like more formally organized. Like we plan out what sessions are going to be there ahead of time and stuff like that. A bar camp style tends to be like everybody show up and whoever wants to teach something does, and whoever wants to, you know, I feel like talking about organic groups, so I'm going to go over in this corner. I think is how those are supposed to go. I've only
so
been
it's a lot
one,
more sort of ad hoc it. And less formally organized and
right.
Kind of like this podcast.
Kind of like our podcast is the Drupal Camp of podcasts.
Yeah. No, we have a list. There's a list somewhere.
There is a list.
And so. yeah, you know, but it can sink or swim, I guess, is a case where you have a lot of people striving for the swimming aspect of things. But cool.
Anyway, that will be in May. And if you go to we should probably strike this from the podcast, though, because I don't know if they're actually out of planning phase yet.
People can look into that. We'll just say, okay. You know. Put that on your radar.
Put that on your radar.
It might or might not happen. However, it looks like Barcelona is sort of full steam ahead.
Yeah.
And likely, even if the conference doesn't happen, there will be Drupal people that will just go there and sit on the beach.
At least
I will. I'll just tell my wife, ah, Drupal conference, gotta go eat tapas and drink cervezas, mas cervezas.
And talk Drupal.
And talk Drupal, talking Drupalese. Yes. So yeah, it was a good thing. Good conference, big success. Yahoo, really did a great job, putting it on, being there, sort of providing the resources, that we needed and stuff like that. And it was,
they were fantastic.
Sort of a feel good time for everyone who was able to go, there are a fair amount of Drupal core people who weren't able to go for one reason or another, which was a shame. But hopefully we will see those people in Barcelona. You know who you are.
And you know why you didn't come.
and stuff like that. And then, of course, everybody got home and got sick. So, oh, well.
Yeah, that was no fun.
The sick part, yeah.
Yeah. But one thing we did discover, though, was that Adrian is a lot skinnier than we thought he would be.
He's kind of two-dimensional, you know?
You hadn't actually met him before, but, you know.
No, no.
His effigy, or what would it be? His stand-in.
Doppelganger.
So I guess some people made a cutout of Adrian. Rousseau.
Adrian is, he's the guy who kind of invented the form API and PHP template. And he's like Drupal's resident evil genius. But visa issues fell through. He couldn't make it. So we made a cardboard cutout of him and took him everywhere so he could kind of be there by proxies.
And if you look on Flickr through the OSCMS 2007 pool of tagged photos, you'll frequently find photos where it mentions Adrian is there, or someone will be sitting next to Adrian, and just look for the cardboard cutout with the OSCMS shirt on, and you'll see Adrian.
And then after the conference, we did the performance and scalability seminar that people have probably heard us talk about on the podcast before. Well, that happened. It was a great success. We had a whole lot of people there. And we're donating, I believe it's $5,800 to the Drupal Association out of the profits from that. So that was fun. We also – there was also a coding what were we calling it? Code Fest. Come and code, sit around in a room and code with a bunch of Drupal people. That was
the Drupal Hack Fest.
Hack Fest, yes. I worked on all kinds of things that day. What did you guys work on?
Mostly running around. But
I there was one patch that actually got committed that day. It had been in the works for probably about a month or so beforehand, but like it actually landed. And then after that point, I went around and was doing a lot of the same running around that Angie was doing, and then trying to do evil, crazy modifications to the node viewing system that may well be coming to a Drupal near you soon.
Cool. I didn't really work on core stuff because mostly I'm just scared to, really. But I worked on a bunch of my modules and stuff. I did some work on the bio module, which has kind of become this, like, it's sort of with the CCK stuff that's in core and the way that CCK now works with core. If you combine CCK and the bio module, it makes a pretty good, like, solution for node-based profiles. You can, you know, have each user has their own biography, or you can change the name of it to something else. And with CCK, you can add extra fields to it. So you can, you know, tag users with taxonomy terms and all kinds of stuff like that. It's pretty cool. So that happened. Although when Rasmus got up and did his security talk, he went to the OSCMS summit website, which Angie and I had kind of thrown together in a hurry, and used the bio module for user registrations on that site, which was sort of a interesting use of it. And there was a bug in it, and the bug was, it wasn't a big bug, but it was spitting up some errors on the page. And Rasmus was saying how that was exposing information about our site. And so I fixed that bug. And
yeah, it was pretty cool. Actually, Rasmus got up in front of everybody and tested the security of a bunch of major CMSs and basically was able to break into all of them with varying degrees of obscurity in terms of the exploits he found. So
always good for Drupal security when Rasmus comes in with his hacking ninja skills. But I think we fared pretty well.
Yeah, he said he had to look really hard to find
Any problems. Yeah,
that's right.
And what else? I worked on contemplate module, content templates module. Had a few little sort of outstanding buggy kind of things that I fixed. There was just some problems that were particularly sort of showing up with PHP 5. I fixed that. That made me feel good to just kind of clean those out. And the big one, and this is a you heard it here first. Check out this word, Zengine. yes, fully geeked out. That so the Zen theme started out as this, like, really concept of a really simple theme that was very themeable, a la the CSS Zen Garden, over time it's sort of kind of gotten a little bloated. Like, I got these ideas for, you know, having, like, full-fledged sub-themes and all this kind of stuff. And so I've started moving most of the code of it actually into its own theme engine, which will work. It actually sort of leans on PHP template pretty heavily. So it really functions a lot like PHP template, but it's got some extra little bits and pieces and stuff like that. And you can actually make an entire full-fledged theme just with CSS files and stuff. So hopefully I'll have that together and out, and people can start taking a look at that at least sometime soon. And the Zen theme has some ongoing little bugs and stuff, and I need to spend some time with that. Actually, if anyone wants to help me co-maintain these things, please contact me, send me an email. I would
And while we're at it, anybody who's interested in co-maintaining any voting-related modules, feel free to drop me a line, because I've got like 80 gabillion of those in my modules list, and every time a new version of Drupal comes out, there's a large crowd of people that say, hey, update this! It's like, ah, for the love. Yeah.
Angie, you have anything you want to give away?
I've been pretty good about just totally not just obtaining any of my modules. So
just say no.
No.
No. Yes, exactly. When I, it's like, I stay away from modules come with a maintenance kind of. So speaking of modules, some new modules, we could go through the Drupal module list. For people that don't know, there's a really cool link where you can find sort of the new modules as they come in. I mean, it actually just shows new module projects. So it's not going to show you a list of modules that have been updated or have new features or any of that kind of stuff. But if you go to drupal.org/taxonomy/term/14, you can see a list of all of the new Drupal modules as they're coming in. There's a RSS feed there too, so you can see the new modules in your RSS reader. It seems like module development just sort of is growing exponentially, and there are more and more sort of new and kind of cool modules coming in all the time. So actually Nathan Haug submitted one that he and I had written a while back for some work that we were doing with Sony Records, called the EXTLINKS, X links, or short for external links module. I guess Ted Serbinski, also from Lullabot, has a module that does the same kind of a thing, but in a filter format. So like, when you create links in your nodes, like users on your site put up links, then they'll in their external links, it'll show a little icon next to them. But this one actually works for everything on the page, so it works for blocks and basically everything. And so it's sort of a different concept; it's more JavaScript based kind of thing. But that's sort of one of those like little teeny little modules that some people might find handy for this kind of thing. I'm writing another teeny little module like that. Hopefully I'll have it done before too long, but I wrote the Scriptaculous prototype Ajax modules for Drupal 4.7. I haven't updated them for Drupal 5 because we've got jQuery as part of core now. And so I'm putting all my focus on jQuery stuff. But one of the things that module, in addition to being a complete API, one of the things that it did, that was called the Spajax module, by the way, Scriptaculous prototype Ajax, it allowed you to, use the Scriptaculous flash tags, or like it also had little shake tag, little shaking stuff, so you can make things on sort of move around on the page a little bit. And there's a technique that 37 Signals sort of kind of pioneered. I don't know if they were the first ones, but they sort of got known for it. This fade yellow thing where basically if there was a new message on the page, once the page loaded up, or if it was Ajax kind of thing, the thing would show up highlighted, but then sort of the highlight would fade out. So the yellow background would fade out and stuff. And I thought that would be really cool for the messages that Drupal presents on the page, because oftentimes, depending on how your design is, or even if it's relatively prominent on the page, people sort of miss it. The thing that says this node has been saved or whatever. And so I had in there the ability to kind of flash it or make it pulsate or shake or whatever in 4.7. And I've been kind of looking for that functionality in Drupal 5. And I haven't found anything that does that. So I'm in the process of writing a module that will do that, hopefully. Although the interface library, which is sort of the Scriptaculous of jQuery, meaning that it sort of has all the special effects stuff, the current version doesn't actually work with the version of jQuery that's in Drupal core. The version of jQuery that's in Drupal core is 1.0.1, I believe.
1.04.
There it is. And, And now jQuery is up to 1.1, and most of the plugins that are being created for 1.1. So what we're finding is that a lot of the plugins that are out there for jQuery don't work with the version of jQuery that's in Drupal core. And it's not just as trivial as basically pulling out the core jQuery and slapping in a new version of jQuery in Drupal core, because some of the core jQuery-based functionality that's in Drupal, like the expanding field sets and stuff like that, stops working, or worse yet, works in a way that renders your page sort of unusable. So there you go. Long story short. So anyways, I'm still working on that. If anyone has any tricks or can point me to the old version of the interface library, I haven't been able to find that online.
There is a patch for core jQuery or Drupal.js, I think, that will let you it somehow patches it so that field sets and stuff will still work if you drop in a different version of jQuery.
Oh, cool. Yeah,
well, that would be cool.
I've seen little bits and pieces, like in the JavaScript group on groups.drupal.org. There's been some talk about it and stuff, but I haven't actually found anything that was sort of like the definitive answer. So, again, if anyone has the definitive answer, post it as a comment on this. Send a link. That kind of thing. So, rat hole. Sorry about that. I went off on a tangent. what other new modules are out there that look like that sort of that you saw and that made you say, ooh?
I'm very excited about the login ticket API module, because as is well known, any module that ends with API, I'm immediately happy and excited about. But the idea is there's different situations. Whether you're sending out invitations to people, or you want people to get like one-time access to a particular node that's locked down for security reasons or whatever, that you want to send out like a temporary invite code or login code to someone rather than giving them a whole full-fledged Drupal account and giving them permissions for the site and everything like that. The login ticket API is just like a back-end tool that modules doing that sort of thing can use to generate those tickets and handle all of the like login and security related stuff. So it's cool for people who are building modules like that, although it's not necessarily something that's visible and obvious to somebody who's just using a site. But it's a cool thing, and it's one of those consolidating functionality that lots of different modules needed, and that always makes me happy.
Huh. I'm still not sure I understand what it does, but it's sort of one of those things I'll sort of file away in the back of my brain, and at some point someone will say, what we need is a login ticketing system. and I'll be able to say, yeah, there's something out
well,
there.
An example is like when you get the change your password, the password change request system that Drupal has just out of the box, where you say, I forgot my password, send me a special link that will let me log in, and then I can change my password. That's essentially a one-time login ticket, and this just exposes an API that other modules that want to do things like that for purposes other than just logging in and changing your password or something could use this as the mechanism for doing that rather than reinventing that wheel over and over and over.
Hmm. Cool. Yeah. Right on. Angie, you have anything on your list as you're looking through them?
I just saw one called AES Encryption, which is pretty cool if you're a crypto geek. It replaces the Drupal system of storing passwords as MD5s with AES, and I don't know how to pronounce it, but Rijindal. It's the problem with reading stuff and not saying it. You know,
yes.
I hate podcasts for that. But anyway, so it's great because MD5 has kind of been the traditional hashing methodology used in most systems for a number of years now. It used to be DES, which with the speed of computers nowadays, you can crack DES passwords very, very easily. But MD5s, unfortunately, are also getting to that point. They're generating what are called rainbow tables, which is a basically a huge list of every single possible password from like one to, I think they're up to 6 or 7 characters or something like that. And because Drupal doesn't salt its passwords, all the passwords are just like regular MD5 hashes. So if somebody were to grab a hold of somebody's user database and was able to use one of these tables, they could potentially get any password, you know, and even if somebody, you know, my password's !Y27P or something like that, if it's short enough, it doesn't actually protect you in any way. So that's actually a very cool module. And it's also something that we really should work on for Drupal 6, because it's only a matter of time before, you know, that becomes less and less safe.
Hmm.
And just as a clarification for anybody there who wasn't following the geeky aspects of it, if I understand that, no, I'm one of the ones who dives into the geeky aspects of it quickly. But if I understand correctly, the idea isn't so much that, oh my gosh, you know, I can't trust my password. It's that if someone were to somehow get a hold of a copy of the database for a Drupal site, this would allow them to actually discover what your passwords are from that copy of the database that they have.
With a lot of work, yes.
Right.
Yeah, it's not like, oh my God, someone can just look at the source code of my website and figure it out. It's like they would have to get into your database. They would have to have a 4 or 8 gigabyte file that has every, you know, it's not like the average person can just, whoop, oh, I got passwords, you know.
It's not a Rasmus demo kind of security.
Right,
course.
Not a Rasmus demo. But it is something that as computers
right.
get more and more powerful will become an issue more and more. So it's good for us to be pursuing other encryption methods. So that's that's a cool module.
That is very cool.
Sorry, didn't mean to geek out there, but.
Oh, you're among geeky friends.
I was just looking at the list. There's an Icecast module that I'm really curious about. Icecast is a streaming media server, and I'm always excited about any sort of media related stuff with Drupal. There's been some really cool improvements to the audio module recently that I'm also excited about. Obviously, at the audio module improvements don't show up in the new modules list, but that's kind of cool. I ran into Andrew Morton, who's the current maintainer of the audio module at South by Southwest, and we sat down and sort of talked about iTunes integration and sort of what was lacking and stuff. And Andrew whipped up some awesome code, and now we have better integration, and I can mark individual podcasts as clean or expletive. Or explicit is what they say, right? And we can put, you know, all the appropriate iTunes tags on things so we show up better in iTunes and stuff like that. So that's nice. And the streaming stuff is really interesting for people who are familiar with Shoutcast or Icecast or any of that kind of stuff. Sort of a really neat and powerful system for doing sort of like real-time radio type streaming, or I guess I don't know if Icecast does video streaming or not, but some cool stuff. So
sweet.
Yeah, there's people doing all these really cool things.
Is it really bad that now that I know we can flag a podcast as explicit, I want us to do a podcast about the importance of declaring variables before using them and then flag that as explicit? Okay, sorry. I'm fine now.
That was, boy, whew. You know, there are actually people listening to this podcast that might get that joke.
All hate mail can be directed to.
There's also this Views Tagadelic module. I don't have any idea. I haven't used that module. I have no idea if it's a mature module or not. But it has both the word views and Tagadelic in it. So, you know,
that's got to be a winner.
You've got to prick up your ears about that. Although I have to say, Tagadelic is basically the reason that I wrote the block cache module. it's just a whole potentially depending on how your site is being used, potentially horribly inefficient to run this really heavy-duty database query to sort of compare all of your nodes and stuff, all of your tags on all of your nodes on every page request. Maybe it's gotten better. Maybe it's not as bad as I think now. But we saw a couple of sites where it was really kind of bringing it down. So if you're using Tagadelic, do a quick code audit and see what it's doing, and consider the block cache module, which could just cache all that stuff and just reload it every 5 minutes or something like that. So. Wow. Well, gee, see, this is the thing. Here we are already 40 minutes into the podcast, just talking about nothing.
Woo!
Yay!
Let's just keep going. There's all these new articles and videos on lullabot.com. I don't know what happened, but we got very prolific all of a sudden. Well, in addition to the aforementioned Drupal song, Robert Douglas put up actually a bunch of things, but he put up a video about how the Drupal diff module works, along with the revision tags module. That's a good one for a video because it's got sort of any module that has two words that could mean various things in various places, like revision and tags, really ought to have a video, in my opinion. Because you want to say, okay, this is what I'm talking about. This is why this is what it is. But it's pretty cool stuff. People should check that out. I mean, the screencast videos are nice. It's just really quick way to kind of get an idea of the things that are out there.
One other cool side note about development that's going on with existing modules is the Path Auto module, which is happily used by a number of sites to automatically generate clean like path aliases for different kinds of content, is in the process of being converted over to use the token module that we have talked about in a previous podcast. So token module's slow but steady march to world domination continues.
What is the token module, Jeff?
Basically, the little bits of text that you can use in Path Auto to say, like, I want the path for a particular node to be the node type, and then a slash, and then the user ID of the author, and then a slash, and then the title of that node. And that's what I want the path alias to be automatically generated. Or I want users, when they create an account, instead of user slash one or user slash two, I want that to be user slash and then their actual name or something like that.
So that's what Path Auto does, but the token module is sort of an abstracted way of creating these little variables to go in various places.
Exactly. And the idea is lots of other modules were starting to use that kind of functionality to do things like automatically generating breadcrumb trails to maintain like the context of where you are in the site, or making little links at the bottom of the node body to click on, or there's an auto node titles module that lets you hide the title field of any given node and automatically generate that from the content of the node. So like if you're creating a biography node in CCK, you can just generate the title automatically from the name field and the birth date and death date field, rather than forcing users to double enter that stuff. But the idea is all of these things required writing the same little code to like generate these little tokens of text so that you could define what the pattern is to use in these different places. And that's what token module abstracts, so that now any module that needs to do that kind of stuff can just call token module and say, hey, what little bits of text can I use to replace? And token module says, here's this gigantic list of tokens that other modules have exposed. And Path Auto, a lot of the token module code is based on the way Path Auto did it. And now it's just a process of Path Auto now moving over to use token as its back end. So that's something that the maintainer of the Path Auto module and I have been sort of working back and forth on for quite a while. And it's nice because it means that somebody who's setting up like Path Auto patterns for their site can also very easily set up matching
patterns for like breadcrumb trails or, you know, automatically generated node titles or things like that, so that there's a lot more consistency in how they manage that context and the look and feel for the site and how people can recognize where they are in the site.
And it really sort of standardizes the way of putting in these various
exactly.
tags, which is nice because the modules were all doing it in sort of similar but different ways and repeating all that code again and stuff. So,
right.
Yeah. Cool. So just look at all these new articles on lullabot.com just in the past month or two. Like, so there's Angie's best practices in open source development, talking about what to do and what not to do. There's an overview. Robert Douglas put an overview of the content construction kit relative to the database, like what it does, how it stores stuff, where it stores stuff, and stuff like that. Another article by Angie, private forums in Drupal. I don't mean to overly pimp the lullabot.com site, but just all this stuff is there. I'm very.
Robert Douglas has also been generating like a scary number of articles on like the internals of Drupal's search system.
Well, yeah, that was it. Just article he just put up. These, like how if you have any questions about how the Drupal search system works, man, it's all there.
It's all ready for geeking out.
Yep. A bunch of the slides and presentation stuff from the OSCMS stuff ended up there on lullabot.com/articles. The performance and scalability seminar slides. We mentioned the search module. What's this stuff? Oh, Matt's book. Information about Matt's book that's coming out first week in May. His book is called Pro Drupal Development. You can go to drupalbook.com or go to lullabot.com/articles, and there's a link to all that there. And then there's also a link to Addy Berry did a cool screencast explaining how to create patches for Drupal and stuff, which is one of those sort of, again, those dark corners of Drupal.
But yeah, it doesn't have
she's
to
been
be.
Going to town, you know, like she's rocking it.
She is. She's rocking it. She's been very involved with the Drupal Dojo and making these videos and stuff. I think it's great. It's super
and
great.
While she's not a Lullabot, she was at our very first Lullabot training in DC. And so we, you know, we kind of take her as one of our
prodigy. We like to see her as. Who knows? She's. We can't take credit. She's done it all herself.
But she's been kicking ass and good job, man. Or woman. Yeah.
Angie, you want to talk some about the Summer of Code stuff? What's been happening with all that relative to.
Yeah, sure. So the deadline has long since passed for students to get applications in. But luckily, we've got a whole bunch of great applications. We've got applications from someone who wants to retool the project quality metrics. We've got projects from someone who wants to make translate internationalization go into Drupal core, just like tons and tons of awesome, awesome projects. And I don't want to give away too much yet because we don't know our slot allocation. So sometime this week, Google is going to tell us, okay, you're Drupal, you get to pick 10 of these projects. And then by then we'll be able to post, kind of the definitive list to know, what projects we're going to have over the course of the summer. So.
Cool. So people can sort of stay tuned. That'll probably make it to the homepage on Drupal.org.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll be making a homepage post sometime. Later this week, I hope so.
So
April 11th is the real date when we find out.
So. How does Summer of Code work?
Right.
Who's involved with it and who decides the various things that get decided
The way Summer of Code works is Google started this program in 2005. It's actually how I got involved in the Drupal community in the first place because I was a student back then. But they sponsor some crazy amount, like $2 million, and they ferreted out over $5,000 per student. And of that $5,000, $4,500 goes to students themselves, and then $500 goes to the mentoring organization. When I say mentoring organization, what happens is Drupal has, or Google, I'm sorry, has a an application period where all the various open source projects can apply to become mentoring organizations, and they say, you know, we're a project that focuses on security, or we're a project that's a CMS used widely throughout the world, or thing, you know, or we're Apache or something like that. And so they fill out an application. Google kind of makes their decisions as to who goes on the list. And then once the mentoring organizations are picked, students go through the various mentoring organizations and find one that looks interesting and sign up for it. They, you know, each organization like Drupal usually posts like an ideas list, but a lot of times students just go nuts and, you know, propose these crazy ideas that no one ever thought of before. And it's really cool to see. And then each mentoring organization within their community pulls out, you know, a few people and designates them as potential mentors. Drupal actually goes nuts during this phase, and we try to get 40 to 50 people because we want to assign two mentors per student. And that way we have a broad mix of expertise and skills and stuff like that, so that when, you know, no matter what we get an application for, hopefully there's someone around who can help. So yeah, we're just we're in the process now. So all those people that volunteer to be mentors are going through, and we're rating the applications and kind of putting them in order from, you know, best to not as great, and then wherever Google chops off the list, the people in that top X are going to be the ones who get selected, and then they just work over the summer on their projects, and hopefully they finish them because if they finish them, they get paid. And then Drupal gets a whole influx of new code and new contributors. So it's an awesome thing for the mentoring organizations. It's an awesome thing for Google to be doing. And it's just a great opportunity for everybody involved.
Cool. Yeah. I mean, it's really been an area of exciting growth. I mean, just to sort of see that stuff happen. I mean, certainly there's a lot of sort of code that comes out that's kind of scrappy code that was like sort of a person's first module that they ever built for Drupal and that kind of thing. But but I think, I mean, a really high percentage of those people stay involved with Drupal and go on and become Angela Byron web chick.
And look at me now.
Ta-da! And you actually been asked to speak at what's the Floss conference?
Oh, right. So there's this conference in Chicago on Friday called Flourish Conference, and it's a conference about getting or having college and university students seeing open source as a viable career option and sort of that sort of thing. So my talk, I got selected to talk about women in open source and kind of the issues we have to deal with that are different than others, and sort of some strategies that we can employ to make open source projects more welcoming, not just to women but to everybody, and kind of things like that. So it's hopefully a good positive talk, not so much a preachy, you know, like men are evil sort of talk. So that's my goal anyway.
But if you happen to
be in the Chicago area and you want to check it out, it's Friday at 3, and please don't throw things at me because I'm very, very scared. Okay, thank you.
it's Friday. So I guess this podcast is going up on Thursday, so it's Friday.
Okay, so if you're not doing anything tomorrow. But
Friday.
One thing that's cool is my parents are coming all the way from Rochester, Minnesota to come see it.
So there you go. And where is it happening?
Oh, right. It's happening at University of Illinois Chicago in SCE 302, which is on the corner of Halsted and Polk, which means nothing to me since I don't know anything about Chicago, but maybe that means something to you.
What is the conference again?
The conference is called Flourish Conference, and the URL is flourishconf.com, and it's free if you register ahead of time. If you show up at the door, it's like $10 or something.
So. Cool. Great. Well, see, there you go. Speaking of flourishing, that's great. So every so often, we get a chance to, and you know, and that's always sort of the way of justifying this. Like, well, we'll just get together and we'll talk about Drupal stuff, and maybe we'll answer some listener voicemail. and of course, now here it is, you know, 55 minutes into the podcast and we're just getting to the voicemail. But if you know, and the other thing is every so often we'll just do a listener voicemail podcast, but, we've got a couple of sort of listener bits. Actually, I think I just see just one here, but, if you want to call with a question for the Lullabot podcast, call 877-LULLABOT. That's 877-585-5226. If you're calling internationally, you might want to use Skype or Gizmo or that kind of thing, in which case you can dial +1. 877-585-5226 for the rest of you, the easy mnemonic device. 877-LULLABOT. Call in and you can leave a question for the podcast, and we'll try and get to it when we can. But here's the latest call that we've got. Let's see what we can do to help this person out. Just a sec here.
Hello, I'm running a site, energista.org, and we're using Drupal to have a bunch of authors cover energy policy issues in Minnesota. The question is how, if there's a module that will prevent people from putting comments up that have scripts in them that would direct people away from the site. Because we've had that a number of times. We have the spam module enabled, and that works really well at preventing people from spamming. But we're still getting these script attacks. Thank you.
Well, there you go. There's a question.
Okay, so that should so not be happening. The only reason I can think of that would happen is, A, if you're giving full HTML permissions to, like, anonymous users or authenticated users, full HTML does not do any kind of XSS checks. So don't give that out to anybody other than administrators in general. The filtered HTML does do an XSS check, and that type of thing is for, like, you can add as many tags as you want there, but that will strip out script and stuff like that. The other thing that could be happening is in your theme, you might be printing values directly from the database and not running them through something like check markup, because check markup will strip out anything like script tags or flash tags or any of that kind of stuff that you haven't explicitly allowed. So... So
let's step back a little bit. What we're talking about is Drupal's input filters, which is called input formats in the menu. This is one of those situations where Drupal calls it one thing for the developers and another thing for the end users. I think the menu item is called input formats, and there are various different types of input formats. For instance, in most blog tools, when you type a carriage return with your, you know, you hit the return key. If you hit it twice, it puts in a paragraph mark. If you hit it once, it puts in a line break, a BR tag. That's how it outputs, but how it inputs, I mean, for anyone that's familiar with writing HTML, you could put 100 line breaks in, and it's not going to put in a line break until you actually explicitly write in a paragraph tag or a BR tag. So most blogging software will automatically go through and do a search and replace. It'll search for line breaks and replace them with either a BR tag or a P tag. But Drupal sort of takes this kind of further, and it's not unique in this way, but it takes it a lot further, in the ability to strip out other things, and by default, when you kind of pull it out of the box, the default setting, for most users is that they can only enter a relatively limited number of tags. They can enter an emphasis tag and strong tags. And I think they can put in link tags and some stuff like that, but they certainly...
Image tags are filtered out by default, stuff like that.
Yeah, certainly they can't put in image tags. They certainly can't put in object tags and embed tags, which would allow them to put in flash or, and the other thing that it does is what Angie's talking about, which is XSS, cross-site scripting attack filters automatically. that will go through and strip out any JavaScript. And that's what sort of a cross-site scripting attack is, where basically, in its simplest form, where you direct someone from the page that they visited to another page, and it gets much more nefarious than that, as we saw from Rasmus at Yahoo. But by default, Drupal shouldn't be doing this. There are ways in that a theme that a themer who doesn't know exactly what they're doing, or maybe is not handling things in quite the right way, can output things without running them through the Drupal filter system. So it might be that things are happening there, or it could just be that your filters are set up incorrectly, and you are allowing anonymous users or regular logged in users who are not administrators to enter full HTML or unfiltered HTML. So what you want to do is make sure that you're filtering it in one way or another. Basically using I think it's the same filter that adds the line breaks and the paragraph breaks, or no it's
there's a line HTML break filter. Yeah, there's a line break filter and an HTML sort of cleaner filter. One important thing to note too is that I believe you can set up your super restricted HTML filter, but if you want to have like different levels of HTML accessibility, you can set up different input formats with different sets of allowed tags. So if you want to have one person, one role or something like that, that has the ability to enter in lots of HTML, but not say object tags to embed, you know, flash in a comment or something like that, you can set that up. And it's very good to do those things. I mean, not to just give people full HTML access.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's all these little, little things that you don't think about that, are exactly the reason why anyone who's written their own CMS in the past, these little edge case things are where it starts to just freak you out. It's like,
I thought I never thought
people would do that. Like, what are they doing? I don't even understand what they're doing. And they're, you know, exploiting the site in these ways that you never thought about.
I thought I was incredibly hardcore just because I had code that made SQL queries not die if you had a title with a quote mark in them. Years later, I realize, oh, there's a whole world of specialization just in cleaning up things like that.
Well, yeah. I mean, not to mention that all the SQL injection attack kinds of security problems that you can have, again, where you never thought about it, you know, that someone can write in a title of something that would erase everything in your database. Like, what?
Oh, it can be done.
It can be done. Shocking. Shocking and amazing and fascinating.
Many, many years ago, when I was working on my first actual web application, people didn't even need SQL injection because I had a page called sql.asp in a subdirectory on the site that simply gave you a big text area and a submit query button.
Oh, dear God.
In retrospect, I'm very fortunate that the site didn't just explode in flames spontaneously.
Yeah. Yeah. So, anyways,
the
moral of the story is that Drupal is really smart about handling these things, and sort of its default settings are usually the best for handling these things.
But the only thing to keep in mind is that it doesn't do filtering on input; it does filtering on output, which means that when you display it, you have to worry about doing check underscore markup and things like that, because the stuff in the database will be exactly what the user entered in.
Well, so, right. And the corollary to that is, if you're doing like templates for your theme or whatever, usually Drupal will get a variable called content and just hand that off to you that you can print out in your theme, and that's already been cleaned up and filtered and stuff like that. What you have to worry about is if you try to go and like access the node object directly or the comment object directly in your theme code and say, well, I want to pull out this particular field from the node object and print it right here.
those fields generally have not yet been cleaned by Drupal because it didn't prep them for you. So that's when you have to go in and explicitly do like check markup and stuff like that.
Yep. Cool stuff. So anyways, that's the general gist of your problem right there. Hey, there's a problem right there. Yeah, just click that button and you're get you going on your way. So anyways, if anyone else has questions, the listener voicemail podcasts are always tons of fun because, you know, we can answer these questions like this and get to use funny voices and try and sound like car mechanics. So 877 Lullabot, and we'd be happy to hear from you. Now we're over an hour. We wanted to talk a little bit about, maybe we could just sort of run through this quick. Let's just run through it quick. We'll do it. We'll run through it quick. What's happening in Drupal 6? What's the new, how's the weather been over in the Drupal head branch, which will become Drupal 6?
The menu system has settled down to the point where more patches are now going in and more testing is being done. That's a big improvement since the last podcast that we did, I believe.
So you're saying it works?
It works. And well, it worked before, but there were lots of pieces that just didn't do anything and were marked as this is yet to be written. And so it just made it hard for people who weren't familiar with digging in, like manually populating certain data to get on past a certain point. It was hard for people who weren't familiar with doing that to actually make things happen. But now that works, so that's good.
Cool.
No, there's more.
There's more. There's more.
Yes.
Tell me more.
Angie, are there any that you're particularly excited about? I know your signatures patch went in.
Yes, but I already talked about that, so I blew my excitement way in the beginning. So now I have nothing to do. No. There's a couple things. Well, there's another patch that I'm working on that's not ready yet, where I'm trying to remove node revisions to a separate module. So that if you don't use node revisions on your site, which a lot of people don't, you don't need the overhead of doing an extra join on every single node load, which happens, you know, 180 times per page. So I'm looking into that, trying to get people to benchmark it. The theme.info files is an interesting one. That would allow us to, if you guys haven't checked out the update status module yet, you need to go and do that. Because it lets you basically, it'll tell you when new module updates are available, providing that you're sticking to the official released versions, which you should be by now. So that's a great module. And the info files for themes would allow us to use that same strategy for themes too. So.
And one of the nice things about that is that we would be able to say, encode things like what regions does a theme have, or what engine does a theme use, or things like that. And all those things could be contained in the info file, which would greatly reduce the load of pulling up the themes page. And it would also make it easier to do things like configure where blocks should go in a particular theme in a much cleaner way that doesn't run into all kinds of code conflict issues. It's because there's a lot of weird things that go on with a theme system right now that in order to even discover like what regions a theme supports, you actually have to load up a theme and execute its code. But because themes are written the way they are, that means that it's very easy for two themes to have conflicting function names and stuff like that. So trying to load both of them simultaneously can lead to all kinds of errors. So moving this kind of information into info files means that it's easier to set them up and configure them without fully loading the theme and running into those kinds of problems. It's geeky, but very cool.
Cleaner. Cleaner.
Yes.
What is this new path alias stuff?
Chicks or Charlie is developing an interface so that you can set one path per page. I'm not
sort of
totally
primary
sold on that idea yet, but he's really excited about it, so people should check it out now. So basically, kind of like with Wikipedia, where you can, you know, if you misspell a word, it will redirect you over to the correct spelling. Or, for example, if you type in, you know, I'm Wikipediaing for, you know, polar bear, it might redirect you to bears, which is the parent article, things like that. So this would allow you to have multiple paths pointing to the same single path, but have there be only one URL for that single path, so that you don't have you know, problems with Google thinking you're a spammer with having more than one content on the same.
And I think part of the idea with that is that as far as an end user is concerned, it wouldn't really be different. They could still use five different paths to get to the same content. But in terms of like the way the server is serving up those pages, it would always treat one of those paths as the official one that is the real path for a piece of content. Because right now, we treat all of the different path aliases as like legitimate full-fledged URLs that exist in and of themselves. And that means that when Google goes through and like scans a site and, you know, archives all the pages, it says, oh, wait, here's these five different pages and they all have exactly the same content. And it's not always the case, but there are certain situations in which sites can get penalized for having duplicate content on the same pages, which, you know, is a no-no and sort of an indication that somebody is spamming. This would mean that Google, when it goes through and like traverses through your site, would be able to recognize, oh, all these URLs are just pointing to this particular page, and I should only count it as one occurrence of that content.
Cool.
So he's got this cool little crack. I don't know your actual name, crack. Steve McKenzie, there we go, has developed this kind of cool Ajax-y little pop-up window thing that lets you just type it in right there, so it's fairly unobtrusive and stuff like that. So.
Sweet.
Huh, cool. Yeah, and it seems like there's more sort of Ajax-y kinds of bits and pieces that are sort of making their way into core. Whenever you get a whole bunch of Drupal developers together, they start talking about, you know, what we ought to do is...
Ajax!
That menu page really could do with, you know, and then... hopefully it inspires at least one of those people to actually do it.
It was actually really interesting at the OSCMS conference, getting a chance to talk to some of the guys from the Joomla project, because they're facing almost the exact opposite challenge that we are. We're starting to ramp up of adding more Ajax and JavaScript oriented stuff, but we've started from a standpoint of always trying to make it accessible and make sure that if JavaScript degrades, it always just drops back to like a normal HTML form or something like that. Whereas on their side, they've had lots of really smooth and slick JavaScript interfaces for different things for a while, but they're now starting to try to make it possible to degrade cleanly back to forms if JavaScript isn't present. So it's an interesting sort of mirror image of the stuff that we're trying to work through.
It is interesting to sort of compare and contrast the differences. I mean, obviously, Drupal has not ever quite looked as flashy as Mambo or Joomla, particularly like, you know, the website and some of the people's first impression stuff. But to some extent, I mean, I guess, you know, this is the Drupal podcast, so I guess I can sort of state which side of the fence I live on. But it seems to me to be a bit of a tortoise in the hare situation, although Drupal has kind of taken the longer road, it's sort of more stable and we're starting to sort of get to a point, from that. At least from the standpoint of visual design and user interface stuff, where we're starting to catch up and maybe even surpass Joomla. So
we shall see.
Who knows? Drupal 6 could be super Ajaxified, flashed out stuff. Starbow did a presentation about AHA, which is sort of a more politically correct version of Ajax, because most Ajax isn't actually asynchronous JavaScript and XML. It's actually more like AHA, which is, what is it? Asynchronous HTTP and HTML, right?
Something like that.
and or something like that. And so he did a presentation on some work that he's been doing with that. And I guess that some of that's going to, well, at least is aimed towards going in core.
He actually sort of grabbed Chex, Charlie, and I, and we had a couple of longish conversations over dinner at OSCMS about some of the roadblocks he was running into with the way that Form API currently works and some of the improvements that could be put in place to allow AHA-style code to be done in a way that's very secure. That's one of the problems right now, is that it's possible to do certain kinds of AJAX and AHA things very easily, but it also sometimes requires turning off some of the Form API's internal security systems, and that puts the burden of doing things like sanity checking and validation and stuff like that on the person who's writing the AJAX code. And while that can be done, it's not comfortable. It means that, you know, somebody who's just doing cool AJAX code suddenly has to come up to speed on all of the potential security risks and stuff like that. So what we're trying to do now is work with him on getting some changes made to Form API for Drupal 6 that wouldn't be super sweeping and, you know, crazy or anything, but would allow those sorts of interactive AJAX and AHA modules to do their thing and not have to reinvent the security wheel.
Cool. Yeah, yeah, that'll be exciting to see. I mean, and in the same way that people can use, you know, autocomplete fields and stuff like that as part of the Form API now, it'd be great to see sort of more complex things
and then maybe we could get rid of poll module.
Dream on, my friend, dream on.
Poll module is our regression testing. We can never get rid of poll.
Yes, it's anytime anything in the form system changes, poll module breaks spectacularly. So it's useful in some ways.
Well, there you go. There you go. All right. Well, let's wrap this thing up, and we'll pick it up next week. We've got a week of training stuff in Providence, Rhode Island. We're doing the Drupal API and advanced theming. I guess if you're listening to this real close to the time that it came out, you can probably still sign up. There are a few spots available, lullabot.com/training, but we'll be busy with that. So there probably won't be a podcast next week. So, it might be 2 weeks. So, but luckily this podcast is probably long enough for a good two or three podcasts in itself. So, you know, if you just space it out, listen to it slowly, you could probably make it last 2 or 3 weeks on its own. So, well, there you go. Angie Byron and Jeff Eaton, thank you for helping out.
And, no, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. But, you know, I've got to do something. So, well, there you go. Thanks for listening. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye, guys.
Bye.